Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
I'm so glad that you're joining me this evening. It's Monday evening, and it's always Monday here on the Shame Free Zone, unless you are listening to the archives. I am broadcasting from the comfort of my cozy little cabin in the middle of the Tahoe National Forest. It is so, so good to be home. I've been on the road now for what seems like months, but it's probably only been about 6 weeks. Went up into Seattle and Portland and Eugene and let's see, the Napa area, was at Sonoma State University at Roanoke Park, then out to Reno. My gosh, that poor little car of mine's put on a lot of miles, and my little dog's been at my side for every step of it. But it's time to be home now for this little last bit of summer, and that's kind of what August is all about, isn't it? Get out there and get a little swimming before the clouds come. Tonight, we are going to be discussing the pelvic floor. Now, that might not sound real intriguing to you, but wait just a minute. The expert who's going to be talking to us, her name is Leslie Howard, has been basically marrying the two concepts of yoga and sex. I think this is very interesting. I'm not entirely sure how these two intersect for her. I'm not entirely sure what she's going to teach us. So I'm very much showing up for this as a student as well. But I'll tell you a little bit about her. She's been working on this topic for 15 years. She's got 3,000 hours of intensive study and teaching in yoga, and she has developed a unique specialty working with women who have challenges in their pelvis. She's discovered a profound way of using yoga poses to alleviate and eliminate discomfort through the deeper understanding of the pelvis. So her pelvic floor work is a result of individual exploration and working with a physical therapist by the name of Lizanne Pastor, who's a senior yoga teacher. Yeah. And if I'm having trouble with that, I'm really going to have trouble with these names. So I'm going to let her tell you who the yoga teachers were that she was working with as well. She is an expert on female pelvic floor muscles. She's been teaching nationwide workshops, including also at yoga journal conferences. And one of the interesting things that we're going to be talking about here is painful intercourse. This affects more women than we probably know. And some women just kind of endure it, and some women can't stand it, so they stop having intercourse. But let's find out what kind of solutions she has for us. Leslie Howard, welcome to the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Ah, happy to be to have you here. I'm actually very intrigued by this topic. Painful intercourse is something that a lot of my female clients bring to me. And as a sexologist, I like to think that I've got a lot of tools and techniques in my my toolbox. But I have to say, this one can sometimes be a little bit entrenched, especially as women get older. So, you know, we don't have to jump into that right this second. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got drawn into this work. How does yoga wind up informing you about pelvic floor and how to cure painful intercourse?
Well, I've been doing yoga, as you said, for a really long time, and I was in a class one day with my teacher, Ramanand Patel, and he instructed us to...
That was one of the names I wasn't going to take on. But there was another one, Manuso Manuel?
Manuso Manos, yeah.
Manos. Almost
Greek,
got it.
Yes. But I was in class with Ramanand, and he instructed us to engage our pelvic floor. And I hadn't heard him say that before, and I knew what he was talking about, but I didn't feel it was specific enough for me to be able to know if I was engaging it. And so I went up to him after class, and I said, well, you know, could you be more explicit about this? I haven't really heard you say this before. And I think he got maybe a little flustered, and he said, well, you know, perhaps you should talk to a woman about this. And he at the time was dating a woman, a physical therapist from Germany who specialized in the pelvic floor. So I thought, okay, they've been talking.
Yeah.
So he told me to talk to her. And I went directly to her and I said, you know, I really want to learn about this. Can you tell me more? And we set up a workshop, you know, similar to the ones that I'm doing with women. And I was blown away because I thought I knew the body, and I do, in fact, know the body, but I was like, I didn't know this much about this part of the body. And I kind of felt, you know, embarrassed and intrigued. And so her instruction was very much in the zeitgeist of, you know, you're female, therefore, as you age, your muscles weaken, and therefore you need to find the muscles and strengthen them. So that's kind of what her teaching was about. And me being a very diligent and obsessive student, went home and did my exercises every day and really worked on, you know, cultivating a sense of subtlety. And I felt like I was pretty good at it. When she would come to town, I checked in with her, and, you know, as much as she could, she said, yes, I think, you know, you've got a pretty good understanding. And then fast forward 2 years later, I started having painful intercourse with my husband, and I'm like, okay, you know, like, what's up with this? So the woman that I'd been studying with, she was back in Germany. Obviously, I was not able to see her. And so I sought somebody out in San Francisco, Lizanne Pastor, who you mentioned. And she specializes in pelvic pain. And, you know, she said, come on in. And, you know, she puts you up on the table. And she's one of these physical therapists that can actually do internal work. And she's like, my God, no wonder you're having pelvic pain. Your pelvic muscles are so tight. And, you know, being a woman in America, it's like, tight, isn't that good? You know? And she said, well, you know, there's too much of a good thing sometimes. So, you know, the light bulbs went off, and I was just like, oh, my God, you know, here I've been engaging and working my muscles, and I think I overdid it.
Huh. So, this is a very interesting thought. Now, you know, and probably, too, I'm just wondering, because I've certainly exercised my PC muscles a great deal over the years, but I just wonder if when you stop exercising them, because I know what will happen, let's say, like, if I am weightlifting, which is something I enjoy very much. If I just stop weightlifting, the muscles actually start to get very tight. And so it's actually better if I go in and I lift weights again because I get a little bit of mobility. Of course, stretching right after the workout is very helpful. But if I'm not exercising and stretching those muscles, they have a tendency to just contract and stay that way. Does the pelvic floor do that as well?
Well, that's exactly let me back up. When I got diagnosed, I thought, oh, my God, you know, I've done this to myself because I was, you know, diligently doing my homework. And really, when I got, and this took, you know, a couple months to really sink in, you know, I examined, like, I'm like, why are my pelvic floor muscles so tight? You know, I do yoga every single day. I'm a very serious yoga practitioner. And here's a part of my body that I didn't know was tight, number one. And number two, like, why is it tight, right? And I realized looking at my life that, you know, I've had some less than stellar sexual experiences along the path. And I've had some trauma in that area. And I also, so don't have the greatest posture. So, you know, my poses, my yoga poses look great, but if I'm really honest with myself, you know, as soon as I'm out of my yoga class, I might be slumping in my chair. Or I noticed when I was standing that I would stand like many women do with their pelvis forward, which if you could look with x-ray eyes, what you're doing there is you're contracting your pelvic floor muscles.
Huh.
So a lot of women have what we call hypertonic pelvic floor muscles, meaning they're living in a state of contraction. And that doesn't mean they're strong. They're actually a very weak muscle that only has one position. So in yoga, you know, the health of a muscle is its full range of motion, you know, being able to completely contract and to completely stretch. And with hypertonic pelvic floor muscles, your pelvic floor muscles are living in a state of contraction. And this can lead to a lot of problems.
Yeah.
So
one thing is that it can be a weak muscle that's just permanently contracted. But what about in your case where you had a very powerful set of PC muscles? It seems like they would be very flexible and adaptable.
No, you know, I'm going to correct you. I don't think they were powerful. I think I thought they were. But I was starting, you know, again, when I thought back over the whole course of events, I think that I was starting with an already very contracted pelvis, and then I proceeded to contract it even more.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
How did you proceed to contract it even more?
Well, I was doing the exercises that that I teach women who have hypotonic pelvic floor muscles, you know.
Okay.
But, I mean, what I came to find out is, you know, again, there's this kind of assumption out there that if you're female, then you have to exercise those muscles all your life, which is true. But a lot of women are already starting out with contracted muscles. Like, they're more contracted than they are loose. And if you try to contract an already contracted muscle, you're just making things worse. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It does. So, it makes sense. But, of course, then the question becomes, well, what do you do with it then?
Well, I actually had to go on a steady diet of learning how to let go and loosen those muscles. And with the guidance of Luzanne, she, as I mentioned earlier, she does internal work. She basically instructed me how to do my own pelvic floor massage, and she wanted me to do it twice a day for 20 minutes, which for any modern woman is a little unreasonable. But maybe I'm thinking maybe she tells you that so that you'll do 10 minutes once a day, which is about what I can handle.
So this is an interesting thing where you're massaging your own pelvic floor, so you are putting your hands into your vulva, right?
Yes, I'm actually using my thumb because that's the most, I think, the best position to do it. And also, you know, as you get a little more experienced at it, you know, she gives you a dilator, which looks like a slender dildo, and which allows you to get a little bit higher. And I have to tell you, Veronica, my thumb was starting to get really tired. So I was glad she gave me the dilator because those muscles were just bound up. They just didn't want to let go. And so not only that was her solution, but being a yoga practitioner, I was like, okay, there's got to be other things I can do. And so that kind of started my experimentation with what can I do through yoga that could help me let go of the gripping in my pelvis. And, you know, the statistics are about 20% of women have pelvic pain. And of that 20% of women that have pelvic pain, a very high percentage of them have hypertonic pelvic floor muscles. And, you know, I have a lot of theories about it, but, you know, I'm sure you're familiar with the statistic of sexual abuse in America. You know, like, the Department of Justice and the CDC have different statistics, but it's 1 in 3 or 1 in 4 women
right.
in the United States have been sexually abused. Well, doesn't it make sense if you're being sexually abused that you would tighten up and grip against that?
Well, it does, and this is what I wanted to know, too. So if you are penetrating yourself in order to affect this pelvic floor massage, wouldn't that release emotional charge or emotional issues?
Absolutely. I mean, it's, I like to call it, you know, the original 1-800 mini storage is a woman's pelvis. I mean, you know, if there's something we don't want to deal with, we just stuff it in there.
And what is that about?
What is that about?
Yeah, it's like we treat it like a pocket or a purse, huh?
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I think, you know, the workshops that I teach have really evolved, and you know, I really ask myself that question: why? And you know, so much of it is cultural messaging. It's our media. It's the way we physically hold our bodies. I mean, you open any woman's magazine, and their pelvis is thrust to one side and forward, which is not a natural position for the pelvis. You know, I think in the media, you know, women are portrayed as sexual objects, and really, that's kind of it. I mean, there's not a lot of positive. If you look at any advertising, it's really pretty bad. You know, a lot of ads I see, you know, to me, honestly, look like rape scenes. Like, you know, a woman's all oiled up, and there's like four men standing over her, and she's got her mouth, you know, half open. It's like, okay, I'm sorry, what are they selling? They're selling underwear?
Yeah.
You know, so I think that, you know, we have kind of a split personality in our culture about how we're supposed to feel about our pelvis. We're supposed to be all, you know, open and, you know, free sexually, yet, you know, you're supposed to also be a good girl, you know?
Absolutely.
It's confusing.
No, it really is. You know, it's interesting. I was just watching a movie yesterday called Easy A, and, you know, it's a comedy, but it was interesting. Carol Burnett is in it. Michael Keaton is in it. But it was all about this young girl it's a 2010 movie, so I thought it was really interesting. Young girl in high school who isn't actually having sex with anybody, but she lies about it and built a reputation for herself. And it just really showed how quickly people turned on her and were cruel to her. And that is still in existence. It's you know, 2011 now, and young women are still really sorting themselves out as good girls and bad girls. We still are right in the middle of the whore Madonna complex. We've got yes, and then in addition to that, I think we've had a pornification of the culture, which is really just kind of extolling mainstream porn, which I have always found really disgusting and distasteful, personally. And I'm somebody who's produced and appeared in porn, but the mainstream stuff seems like it is really bent upon being as degrading and oppressive to female sexuality as possible. So the whole idea of pleasure and how a woman's body works in order to accommodate pleasure seems to be left out of the equation.
I could not agree more. I mean, one of the things I really want to provoke in my workshops is, let's start a conversation about this, number one, but like feminism, like what happened to feminism? It's gone. I mean, and it's actually, it's been successfully hijacked that it's now a dirty word. Like, you're a feminist? Oh, you know, like that's something bad. And, you know, really, you know, the definition of feminism is just equality. Like, is that bad, really? And I really find, you know, women today, I'm 48, and, you know, younger women, I think they think everything's fine.
Yeah.
And things are better. Yeah, absolutely. They're better than they were 20 years ago, 40 years ago, 60 years ago. But we still have a ways to go.
Well, I've been a spokesperson for sexual, a sexual bill of rights, and specifically sex worker rights, for 2 decades now. And certainly my vision was not that every young girl owned a pair of stripper heels and knew how to work a pole. And that's great if you want to do that. That's wonderful. Frankly, I wouldn't mind learning how to work a pole. I have nothing against it. What I do have something against is a culture that pretty well demands that girls now be, projecting the sexual persona that has so little to do with their own pleasure in their own bodies, and has very much to do with meeting the male gaze, fulfilling male fantasies, right down to even sexual orientation, where now the vast majority of girls are all pretending to be bisexual, which kind of exceeds the law of averages even, because it's popular. And what I see in my office...
cool.
Yes, it's cool. So Katy Perry says, I have so many women coming to my office who are doing all of these things. They're taking the stripper courses. They're trying to vamp it up, and they're trying to emulate what they see in mainstream porn. They are so sexually frustrated. There's so many women who are not having orgasms, who are still faking orgasms, and also this other thing is anal sex has become incredibly popular on a first date, and has been now for a good, I'd say, 10, 15 years.
I've also read it's very popular in the Christian fundamentalist world because it's okay to have anal sex. It's not okay if you're not a virgin when you're married.
Yeah.
So that's got to cause a schism in one psyche, don't you think?
Absolutely, I think so. And I think we've gotten to this point culturally where we have like zero respect for the female, womb or vulva. It's there's no connection to that anymore. I mean, even in our birth process, we just cut it open.
I believe me, I rail about all of this. It's really bad, and it's really sad. It's, you know, we have a culture right now that holds up the ideal beauty as, you know, someone who's 5'9" and 110 pounds.
Yeah.
And, which doesn't fit. I think the numbers are like 4% of the population or something like that is, you know, could match that statistic. You know, the average woman is 5'4" and 140 pounds. So it's not surprising to me that you're seeing a lot of women not having orgasms, because the self-hatred, the self-talk of that they're not pretty enough or sexy enough or thin enough or breasts aren't the right shape, size, color, whatever, fill in the blank. I mean, it's really bad. And I, you know, one of the things I really want to try to do is empower women from this perspective, from getting to know your own pelvis, you know, to having a conversation with it. To, you know, knowing it's not just a sexual thing. It's actually part of who you are. It's your essence of being a woman is your pelvis. I mean, truly, what it separates you from being a man is what's inside your pelvis, the contents of your pelvis. Right?
Absolutely, it is. The reason I'm being quiet is because I'm just like trying to take that in. That's a lot that you're communicating there.
Yeah,
I think it is for a lot of women. It's a kind of a scary unknown area.
Scary unknown. I mean, you wouldn't believe. I've had women come up to me after my workshop. I tell them, you know, they've got homework, and part of their homework is to get some lubricant. Lay it out on your bed and put your thumb, you know, not on your clitoris, but like, you know, around the edges, inside the edges of your vulva, to feel your pelvic floor muscles and to see, are there any tight spots or, you know, is there pain? And I've had some women come up to me and say, you know, is there any other way that I can check? And they do not want to do that. And I'm just astounded by that.
They want to keep the unknown the unknown. The culture is definitely influencing women to, you know, take a pill to control their period, try to get it down to, you know, three times a year if they can. And then, of course, to plan when they're going to give birth, you know, as by cesarean, of course.
Right, right.
So that they don't have to in any way connect with the natural rhythms of their own cycles and their own body. Okay, so let's take that a step further. You're telling your clients that they need to go home with a bunch of lube and stick their thumb inside of their vagina and feel around to see how tight the muscles may be or may not be. What's the step two after that? Let's say you encounter a stretch of the pelvic floor that is tight. Then what would you do?
Well, I instruct them to, if they do find tight, painful, hard muscles, that they really do need to embark on a steady diet of doing this every single day.
Uh-huh.
Which is what I had to do. But, you know, I added to that because what I found as a yoga practitioner is, you know, I found this fascinating, but because I think part of my problem is my posture, my daily life posture. And let me just say I'm not alone in this, is that a lot of women don't sit very well, don't stand very well. And because of the way we have kind of picked up a posture, let's say, of someone in Vogue magazine, that does not help you breathe, okay? So if you... I'm assuming you're sitting. If you are sitting with a very rounded back and kind of bringing your tailbone under you, and you try to take a deep breath, you can't. And so women are living like this. I was living like this, and I didn't realize. Again, you know, here's a yoga person who's fairly in touch with her body while doing her practice, but stepping off the mat was a whole different thing. And I realized, you know, I'm not really, when I'm like out and about in the world, I don't think I'm breathing fully. And women are taught from a very early age to suck it in. Don't let your belly hang out.
Right.
Contract your rectus muscles. Make them hard. Bring your pubic bone towards your navel so that that area goes backwards. And what that does on a breathing level is it cuts off your ability to take an abdominal breath, not to mention what it does to your organs. I'm convinced that a lot of prolapse is because of our poor posture, because if you are sitting or standing with a tucked under posture, the only thing holding up your organs are your perhaps flimsy pelvic floor muscles. Whereas if you're standing with good posture or sitting with good posture, your organs are actually resting on the back of your pubic bone. So
interesting.
I don't see a lot of that going on in the world. And a lot of the problem is chairs. We're just a sedentary culture. And
Right.
That's a big contributor. So
women can work on their posture. Do you recommend that women take yoga? Will yoga help the pelvic floor?
Well, now, you're asking a yoga teacher if I'm telling people to take yoga. Well, of course I am. Yes. I mean, yoga, I'm a believer, right?
Sure.
It gets you more in touch with your body. It opens up your body. But
yes.
To get to your pelvic floor muscles aren't that easy because they are, as you said, hidden. And, you know, depending on how you do your postures, you can actually keep your pelvis hidden. So, you know, if you're one of these people, you know, I joke that, you know, most of my life I lived in Tuckistan, you know, because I tuck my pelvis on.
Okay.
And... that I got to get out of there and I got to like let my tailbone, I have to liberate my tailbone. My poor little tailbone has been stuck under me forever. And if you look at bodies from third world countries that have not grown up with chairs, that don't have chairs to sit on,
uh-huh.
Their postures are sometimes amazing, like magnificent. They look completely different from Western bodies.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. So yoga can help the bigger muscles, and yoga can help the smaller muscles, but it's a little more complicated. It takes a little more patience. It takes a little more level of subtlety, I'll say. You have to cultivate a level of subtlety to be able to stretch your pelvic floor muscles and actually feel them.
Okay, so you are recommending that they take yoga, and that's helpful, but you're saying that that would not solve the whole thing.
It will not, no. So we're using the hypothetical person who has hypertonic, tight, possibly painful pelvic floor muscles. I would recommend to them that they get into the habit of massaging their pelvic floor. For me, I found it very helpful to just do it before I went to sleep. I just got into bed and just did it. And, to really focus on your posture, standing and sitting in the world, to notice, do you have the ability to take a deep breath? Are you able to breathe fully in a way that you feel the breath in your abdomen? And absolutely to take yoga and to do, certain yoga poses in a certain way to stretch your pelvic floor muscles.
Okay.
How does
the exercise that you give women to use a lot of lube and, put their thumb inside of their vulva, how does that differ from perhaps what sexological body workers do? Does it?
I can't answer that question because I don't know. You'd have to tell me what they're taught, and I could tell
okay.
you the difference.
Yeah, sexological body workers, do body electric graduates, all come out of the Joseph Kramer School of Thought, which is very much about massaging yonis and lingams
mm-hmm.
in order to mm-hmm. usually release emotional baggage, not just to elicit sexual pleasure, but often mm-hmm. to, it's kind of a therapeutic.
It sounds similar, but I'd have to say it's probably either a lost art or not very many people know about it or willing to do it. I that would be my guess.
Yeah.
I take a very anatomical approach. I mean, I come from the tradition of yoga that I study is called Iyengar, and Iyengar is known for its precision.
Uh-huh.
So, that's my background. So for me, I thought, how can I teach these women, so they get it? And I have, over the years, kind of accumulated all these teaching tools, and one of the most effective things I have is I have a 3D medical model of a female pelvis with all of the muscles, all of the pelvic floor muscles. And, how they sit, where they are, and they're separated out from each other. And then it has organs that you can put in and take out so that women can see how the organs sit and how if you're sitting in a bad posture, how the organs would more easily fall and prolapse, or, if you're sitting in a good posture, how that would help support all of your organs, as well as it's the seat of yourself. I don't know what you were talking about. I'm not familiar with it, so I can't comment too much on it. But I think knowledge is power, right? So give people as much information as they can take in and then let them figure it out. Give them instructions, give them drawings, let them hold this pelvis, let them look at it. Because then, studies do show that the better you can visualize a muscle, the more accurately you can work it. I mean, they're using this with Olympic athletes, with muscle, visualizing muscles and how they work. So no different in the pelvis. They're all voluntary muscles.
Right. Okay.
So I guess I would just say, again, not knowing so much what you're talking about, I would say probably it's a little more Western approach just because it's a little more technical.
Oh, right.
Like what you're describing might be a little more spiritual, esoteric, which is great,
Well, Joseph Kramer doesn't really come from a spiritual, but definitely therapeutic. So let's talk a little bit about the emotions that are released with some of your clients when they put, you know, they penetrate themselves and start massaging the pelvic floor. What kind of emotions can somebody expect?
Well, yeah, I don't hear from a lot of them afterwards. I do hear from some of them. But I would have to say the ones I hear from overwhelmingly tell me, you know, there's a lot of pain there. And, you know, women, again, our culture, just because of the way it is, we have a lot of shame around our pelvis. You know, God forbid you had an abortion. My God, do you think you could tell anybody or talk about it?
Right. But
that is just not accepted in our culture. There is so much shame hung on abortion. So if you've had an abortion, if you've been sexually abused, I mean, of course you're going to hold that in there and lock it up and throw the key away. You know, as you said earlier, you know, women just don't want to talk to it. They don't want to open the conversation because there's a lot of painful stuff in there. I mean, I feel like it's a holding place, not just for things like abortion or miscarriages, but lost love, you know? I mean, where do we feel love when we're really in love with somebody? My God, you know, what an erotic place. And let's say you're disappointed or your lover leaves you or you're rejected. I mean, you hold all of that in your pelvis.
Yes. So let me see if I'm getting this. If you've been sexually abused or date raped or had an abortion or a miscarriage, or perhaps a botched birth, or you've had a divorce, a failed relationship, you've had your heart broken, which one of these is going to describe just about anybody listening.
Right.
You can count on pelvic floor massage to release some unpleasant emotions, maybe grief would be a good way to term this.
Yes, that's very well put. Yes, grief. Yeah, and I believe that we are a sadness-denying culture.
Yes, we
you know,
sure are.
We do not embrace that. We do not, you know, we don't welcome tears in our day-to-day life. It, you know, it's like, you know, oh, buck up, hold your chin up, you know, all the sayings you could rattle off.
Oh, yeah.
Right off the top of your head, because we've all heard them a million times before. Yeah, so if you're feeling sad, people want to tell you jokes. They don't say, I'm going to sit with you and let's feel sad together.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's certainly a skill set that I'm teaching my clients, is how to validate active listening, you know, validating emotions, staying with the feelings and, you know, resisting the temptation to get into solutions, because I think it's very important. We got to slow down, especially when it comes to our intimate relationships, because we don't want to connect so much logically or politically or around the facts. I tell my clients, I say, when you're at home with your partner, there are no facts. There's just feelings. That's a good way to get into arguments, you know. No, yes, I know you said it. No, I never did that. Yes, you did. It's like, what a waste of time. What are you feeling? How are you feeling?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we create that heart connection and, you know, build connection and compassion with each other? So it almost seems like some of what you're teaching here is about really learning how to listen to your vulva, and also to build a compassionate connection with your vulva, so that you're not just treating it as, you know, in a utilitarian fashion. Would you say that there's some truth to that?
I would definitely say there's truth to that, and I wouldn't limit it to the vulva.
Expound on that.
Well, you know, I love the shape of the pelvis. I mean, it's, you know, it's got this, just these beautiful curves to it, you know, men and women alike, but women more so. You know, women's pelvises, if you look at just the bone structure, generally have a wider pelvis because we're built to have babies. And, you know, the sacrum, that's such a beautiful bone. I mean, I think it's so aptly named, that it's sacred, and that what the sacrum witnesses is sacred. You know, the sacrum is sitting there looking at all your organs and everything that's going on there. The vulva is the doorway, and then it's just everything, all the contents of your pelvis. You know, I love people to know what's in there, not just, physically, but spiritually and emotionally, and just, you know, really have a relationship with your own pelvis. And I know that sounds bizarre, but not to you probably, but you don't hear our culture saying that. Our culture tacitly is saying don't have a relationship with your pelvis.
Yes, it's true. It's absolutely true.
So, and I will tell you, you asked me about, you started off about saying, tight pelvis, painful pelvis, and sex. Well, this has added a whole other dimension to my sex life with my husband. It's been great because, when I was having the pain, I'd have to be like, you have to stop. It just hurts too much. And, and he stuck by me and, with all these doctors and trying to figure out what all this was. And it was really the physical therapy that was the key to healing myself. And my physical therapist is in San Francisco, of course. A San Francisco physical therapist would say, would you like your husband to come in here and I can teach him how to do this? And I was like, wow, well, God, isn't it every man's fantasy to have two women, to watch two women?
Right.
I'm sure he's going to sign up for that. And when I suggested it, he was like, oh, my God, that would be so embarrassing. No. I want you to teach me how to do it. But anyway, it's part of our sex life. It's like, when he says, do I want a massage? He doesn't mean my shoulders. It's great.
So your husband does it now.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I told him that his dating capital is way up there. Should we ever split up? He's got some information that most men don't have.
I would imagine so. So I'm taking it that you're not experiencing pain during intercourse now.
I am not.
And does this have any impact on lubrication?
Does it have any impact? Yes. Yeah, I mean, I feel like, I will say, let me back up and I'll get to your question, but I just want to say that, there are times when my pelvis goes back into its old pattern.
Uh-huh.
Like if I've been traveling and sitting on a plane for a long time, or let's say I haven't been in a place in my life that I was able to connect with myself for a couple of days, sometimes my husband and I, will be fooling around and he'll be like, oh my goodness, your pelvis is so tight. I mean, he's like, he knows me on that level now, which, is totally, new for us. And he knows, oh, the right side's tighter. It's really quite lovely.
Wow.
It creates this whole other level of intimacy. And then as far as lubrication, yeah, I definitely, the pain, what is your reaction? What is a human being's reaction to pain? They grip, right?
Right.
Like, if you feel pain, the first thing you do is you tense up. So, if you're feeling pelvic pain and you're trying to have intercourse or like just, foreplay, and you have pain, like forget it. You've got it. There's got to be so much patience and going so slow. My point is, if you're really tight and there's some pain there, there isn't going to be any natural lubrication. But I'm 48, So I am probably in perimenopausal, I think would be safe to say.
Right.
And I would say, yeah, I'm not lubricating the way I was when I was 25. But, you know, with patience and time, no problem, you know. Mm-hmm. But it might take a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, yeah. And you have found that the pelvic floor massage has helped that aspect or had no
Absolutely.
Effect?
Absolutely.
It has.
No, it has. It has, because, again, it's more like it's a deep relaxation. It's a deep letting go.
Mm.
And that just lets your, in yoga we call it prana. You've heard it called chi. But, it gets the prana flowing, which gets everything else, you know, lined up.
Ah, very good.
So,
very good.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just wondering, as far as, you know, for foreplay, for couples, would it be helpful to do yoga and then pelvic floor massage before they having actual sex? Or, I don't know, have you, like, put those together at all?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, again, if you're doing yoga, you are stretching your muscles. And, you know, I think as a culture, we're just a bunch of tight asses. I mean, you know, we value speed and I think, you know, there's kind of a value of an anxious personality almost. I mean, look at the success of Starbucks, you know. I mean, that's
right.
All about going faster. And when you do yoga, it forces you to slow down. It brings more space, more physical, psychological, spiritual space into your muscles, into your body, into your mind. It helps you breathe more fully. And, you know, I mean, you're going to have a much stronger sexual connection with somebody if you're relaxed.
Mm. Mm. And that's a hard sell in our multitasking driven society, that's for sure. But I really applaud you for putting that out there, and especially I hope the women who are having painful intercourse or noticing that things don't work quite the way they used to since entering perimenopause or menopause, that they'll pay attention. Now, what if they want to take one of your workshops or classes or become one of your clients so that you can coach them through this? How do they contact you? Do you have a book or a website? Or I know you got a website. LeslieHowardYoga.com.
Yes, that's right. I am working on a book with Joanna Frew, who I know is
yes.
podcast on your show.
I got to meet with Joanna Frew just a week ago, and I was so excited to hear about your plans for co-authoring a book with her. I know she's an amazing performance artist, and apparently the book is going to be all about yoga and pelvic floor massage. Is that true?
Yes, that's true, and much, much more. I mean, I'm so thrilled to be working with Joanna because she brings all of her art history, feminism, you know, her scholarship to the book. And this is something that I think is missing from the books that are out there about the pelvis. There
mm-hmm.
are some really good books on the pelvis. I have them on my website. There are excellent books out there, but no one has taken it to the next level of, hey, let's look at this contextually. And that's what my workshops are about. It's not just yoga, breathing, and the pelvic floor. It's, hey, ladies, like, why are we so cut off? Why are you cut off? You know, how can we empower you to have a relationship with your pelvis, to feel good about your body, to love yourself, to love your pelvis? So that's coming. Look for that.
And you know, we'll have you back on the show at that time. We will.
Okay.
We'll be back on the show to talk about the new book. And maybe we'll have Joanna Frew on with you as well. It'd be fun to hear both of you talk about that.
That
would be great. Yeah. So LeslieHowardYoga.com. Leslie, thanks so much for being in the shame-free zone. And you know, I hope that we will all, as soon as we, those of us that are on the air, get off the air. Those of us that are listening, stop listening. It might be great tonight to actually have some kind of homework exercise around the pelvic floor massage. Do you recommend candles and incense or music, or does it matter?
What matters is that you're comfortable and that you feel safe. So if you're living in a home with children that might barge into your bedroom, you may want to lock the door. But yes, I mean, you know, take a bath, if that works for you, light candles, get the lubricant out, you know, get to know yourself and feel around in there. It's not just, you know, it's not just a clitoris. There's so much more there.
There is so much more, but just so we know here, I've got to say, the clitoris is huge, and it's all over the place there. So a lot of what you are going to be massaging will be clitoris, too, even though it won't be the glands.
I tell women, you know, save the clitoris for the last part, you know. Do your homework with focus, and then you can venture on.
Oh, so that's a cherry on top, is it, Leslie?
That's right.
Okay. Well, good. Let's all go do our homework now. You kick out some of the best homework. I think it may be actually more fun than some of the homework I assigned. But
I think I've got a great job.
You got the corner on great homework. All right, Leslie. Thanks so much. And
okay,
to my listeners, thank you for tuning in. Next week, we will be having another episode of The Shame-Free Zone, and my guest will be Karen Solomon. Karen Solomon is a good friend of mine, actually. I haven't seen her since our Harbin Hot Spring days. But anyway, she's going to be catching us up. She's got a brand-new book. So I hope you tune in next week, and if you need or want to contact me for any reason, you can check out my website at theshamefreezone.com. That's theshamefreezone.com. Or you can just call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. That's 888-903-0050. That's it. Good night from the Shame Free Zone.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with me. Sering kesepian.